President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprint, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour. Wow, what a 24 hours it has been. Here we are already now, April the 1st on the West Coast, April the 2nd on the East Coast, and in the Central Time Zones. Good morning or good evening to you, whatever the case may be. I had the opportunity to receive just countless affirmations of prayer and blessings from many, many people around the globe, and I'm somewhat speechless. Speechless in a sense, and overwhelmed by the outpouring of love and consideration to me and my family, and my father's passing, which I announced live on the air yesterday during the show with Greg Pappas. And I have to compliment Greg and how he handled such news on live radio. I hope I never have to do anything like that again in my lifetime, and I certainly wouldn't wish it upon any other talk show host out there. And still, I have to say that it was quite a blessed experience in many, many ways. I've come to realize some things more profoundly than I have in the past about what is going on in this world, and really how much an illusion, how much a script it is. You've heard me talk about this many times, so this is not a new revelation, other than the change in my consciousness that has come about through the passing of my father, and the perspective of how the world looks when one operates on such a consistent basis through the heart, and you find that your thoughts are meaningless, and things that you plan in many cases are meaningless. Just something as simple as driving down a highway and being absorbed in the moment to an extent. And I'm not saying that if you're in a state of grief, or you're in an altered consciousness, that you get in a car and drive. What I'm about to describe just for a moment here is the fact that I was driving down the highway on the way to the hospital to say my goodbyes to my father, and it was like I was not there. If you can imagine your consciousness jumping to a totally different space, a different dimension, and understanding that someone that you loved dearly, someone who brought you into the world, has left, and you've lost the opportunity in the three-dimensional continuum of time and space to say anything to this person. Now, on a spiritual level, that's quite a different story. But you don't have the opportunity to look at that person, to smile at that person, to tell that person you love them, and hear it back like we expect to hear it back in the physical realm. And I found my mind had let go of what most of us would interpret as grief. My mind had let go of many things. It even let go of driving. And yet I was fully aware of driving. I was fully aware of being cautious and not speeding and you know, obeying the rules of the road. And yet I had to ask myself, where am I headed? Where am I going? Literally, where am I going? And on what road am I driving, and where do I turn off to make the to take the side road that leads me to the hospital or the hospice center, actually it was. And three times I corrected myself and gathered my thoughts and immediately returned back to that space in the heart where there was no thought. And yet I was functioning. I think I was driving better than most people I saw in front of me, behind me, and passing me 10 to 20 miles faster than I was going. And I was going a reasonable rate. I wasn't speeding. And I felt my understanding of what I was experiencing expand beyond description. And I said my goodbyes to my father. It was quite early in the morning. It was after my show. And actually, I had this experience twice in the day. And I suppose when we're driving, we kind of take things for granted. We're in automatic mode, so to speak, and we may think about where we're going and what we might be experiencing when we get there, or what we have to do. We might be considering some tasks that we have planned for the future. But certainly it's evident that many people aren't thinking about driving, and I had no intention of taking my attention off of driving, and yet I found myself somewhere else. Well, when I came back from that experience, and it's a heavy experience to lose someone that you love, someone in your family, the person that brought you into this world, or at least was 50% responsible for bringing you into the world, you go someplace where you don't go in other times in your life. We've all lost loved ones, we've lost friends, and we mourn, we grieve their passing, and yet there's no experience like losing a parent. And for that matter, a brother and sister, it's the same, yet your parents brought you into the world. And you know someday they're going to pass on, you know someday you're going to have to face that situation, but I can tell you it's not the kind of grief that we anticipate. And there are some that say we grieve for ourselves. And that's probably true in a lot of ways. Knowing that, I focus my attention on my father and being certain or assured that he was getting to his destination. Now, where might that be? Well, we could take up several shows on that, and I'll do that in the future. But what I want to say is that after this experience, after I came back into reality and had dealt with all of this, I understood that what we are experiencing on an everyday basis on this planet, with all the fear-mongering, the chaos, the lies, the deception, the corruption, government, organized religion, the educational system, all of these things are a farce. They're all an illusion. They really don't mean anything. They really don't. And there's some college professors out there that might be listening right now that say, how dare he say that? I have a doctorate degree in this and that. And I remind them or those out there that understand what's going on in the educational system and has been for the last 60 or so years, that PhD can stand for piled higher and deeper as well. And there are other phrases for the other levels of college degrees and certifications of intelligence. Some of the most incredible people I've met in my lifetime don't have a college degree, didn't go to a school. Some weren't able to go to school at all. And yet they've demonstrated a capacity to show love and ingenuity and creativity and invention for the benefit of mankind. What does this have to do with someone passing? Well, when you're in the heart, lots of things flow through you. You open a doorway to the center of the universe. I know this. I've experienced it before, and I just recently experienced it. and we look at our problems in the world, and everybody wants a solution. They clamor to read my research. They clamor to listen to my radio show and to hear the wisdom that my guests bring. And then they turn and walk away and go back to the routine as if nothing happened. And to me, in a sense, that type of response is it's prototypical, and at the same time, it shows that we shirk our responsibilities to ourselves and expects that person that brought that information forward, that enlightenment, who that person who showed us something that we struggled our whole lives to understand, all of a sudden we understand it, and then we expect them to continue on doing things for us instead of us getting off our rear ends and doing it for ourselves. There have been many low times or low spots in my life where no one came to aid me, except my father, my mother, certain people in my family, maybe a few friends, but most people don't think of that. Even when they know that you may be in need of some kind of help, and I don't necessarily mean it's financial. Sometimes it's a life and death issue. And there are those that they care not to be bothered. They have more important things to do. Sitting on the couch with a bag of potato chips and a 12-pack of beer is their reality. And that's a choice they make. That's fine. But then don't come criticizing the messengers and don't criticize the message, especially when the messenger's delivering the message from a higher place that you probably could never comprehend anyway. But it became very clear to me, and I want to wrap this up because I want to bring our guest on. He's been waiting very patiently. It became very clear to me, and it goes beyond words, because you have to be in the heart to see this and to experience it. And the process of dealing with the inevitable passing of someone in your family, a parent, causes you, if you have any semblance of a human being in your shell, then you will understand what I'm saying, that you will look at the world's problems and understand that they're not as difficult as they appear to be. And I suppose I, as well as everyone else, in some level is in the matrix, but I'll tell you, I found a way out. I found a trap door that leads out, or a dumbwaiter. You get in it and you pull that little rope and it takes you to another level and you see the whole picture. And that's what I came out of this experience with. We haven't buried my father yet. You know, we haven't had that opportunity yet, and that will occur, you know, by the end of this week. And I'm imagining that I will continue to have some revelations from the spiritual realm. There are those out there. I've talked to some people about this today. Some dear friends and I have exchanged words about these topics, or this particular topic, this issue of what do we do with this insanity on this planet? How do we solve this problem? Certainly running away from it is not a solution. But I can tell you that if you get into your heart and really in a purest sense of love and really seeking to understand who you are and why you are here, that in and of itself is enough to present to you some solutions to these problems. And you'll see what we see as mountainous or cavernous problems are really very small and very simple. They'll fit into a thimble in relationship to what I experienced, especially within the last 24 hours. And my thanks again to all the people around the world that have been praying. Literally thousands and thousands of people have been praying. And I'm honored and humbled by that and forever grateful. And my family is also grateful. I speak for them as well. With that, I would like to welcome back to Evident Footprints the man with the hottest website on the planet, educate-yourself.org. If you want to learn about things that you don't read in normal books you will not hear on mainstream media, visit his website. He is an excellent researcher, equally fine journalist, a metaphysical scientist. He's a musician. He knows a lot about history, a lot about healing, alternative therapies, and all kinds of things that we'll be talking about in the days, weeks, and months to come. My good friend, Mr. Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to the show.
Hello, Don. Thank you for having me on again. It's a pleasure to be back to have another delightful conversation with you.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you here. I hope I didn't take up too much of your time here. I had to deliver that message tonight, though, just to communicate, you know, what I've been through. And I'm sure there are many people out there that know the same thing. Just from the few people I talked to today, including you, we've been through that experience. And, you know, I'm going to give you an opportunity if you want to say something about that before we move on to some other topics. You know, it's the issue of spirituality, I guess.
Yeah, right. Well, thank you. Well, first, yeah, I enjoy listening to your monologues. You always say very interesting resonating things. I've enjoyed the shows that I've heard you do in which you alone just talked for the whole show without a guest, and these what you had to say tonight was equally interesting. So it's not necessary to apologize. I enjoy hearing and appreciate what you have to say. You say many things that are in tune with the let's say the life force of the flow, because I feel the same way. I notice many things you say are the very thoughts that I have ruminated about at just about the same time that you say them. You know, you find this phenomena with twins all the time. They can practically say, because they're sort of on the same stream of consciousness, and there's no need to. I enjoyed and appreciated hearing what you had to say. Let's talk about this, because younger people particularly, I like to tell younger people who are, you know, maybe still in high school, maybe going to college, maybe not, maybe in that age range, maybe young, you know, newly married people, or let's say people who have a young family. Folks listening to this, men, you know, mothers, fathers in their 20s and their 30s with young children, their life and the experiences they will have and the life they will enjoy are dependent on what people like you and I and others achieve and helping to help those who are younger, because there was a time when I was there, when I was younger. Of course, I never had great difficulties in my life. I've never had a major accident or never had a major disease, crisis, the weather. I've been lucky. I was born with a couple wonderful parents. I had a loving mother and father, and they raised me well. I was very happy as a kid. I just loved life, and I had a good upbringing, decent family. I had nice teachers throughout school. You know, I just had a very nice life, and so I'm very optimistic towards life. I enjoy life, but I do remember that I was certainly afraid of dying when I was younger, when I used to go to school and you hear people talk about, particularly, you know, there's a phenomenon for people who might be interested in, let's say, going to college as a pre-med student. You take these courses, and they discuss all these diseases, and it's very common for the student to become alarmed by what he's hearing, and you start almost imagining you have diseases. It's as you're learning about them, cancer particularly tends to scare people to know, and or at least it did in earlier decades. It seems to be less of a frightening thing now. But so anyway, I forget the name of it. But there's this syndrome in which if you're studying about biology and diseases, and particularly if you're in that area of pre-med or med school, that often you start wondering, am I getting this or I'm getting that? So that's normal, but I couldn't understand it when I heard my older relatives, when they get together, they seem to have such a, I don't know, easy attitude about dying. They would joke about it. You know, I had this one uncle who was a big rotund guy, and he was fairly successful. He started his own business as a young man, and you know, he didn't have any formal education at all. I don't think he even got beyond grammar school, but he created his own business. He was quite successful, and when he arranged, I remember, to get his plot, his wife had already died at this point. We were at some family get together. And he was laughing about it. He said, "Yeah, I just got a hole for myself this week." And the way he expressed it, and just laughed about it. I used to wonder, how is it you can become so calm about the idea of dying? When you're younger, you know, when you're in your teens and early 20s, particularly when you don't think you're ever going to die. You imagine that. You're going to live forever because you feel, you feel the life force just surging through you, and you don't have any physical symptoms, of course, that you get when you're older. And anyway, it's typical to think you're going to live forever when you're younger. And but so I had, let's say, the normal fear of dying. It wasn't, I wasn't preoccupied with it. Of course, I didn't think for a moment that I would die, particularly at a young age. You just have this inner confidence that no way, nothing's going to happen.
Well, the fear is programmed into our subconscious.
Yes, right. Anyway, what I want to get to, though, is that I still couldn't quite understand, and I would hear my father talk about this philosophically and so forth, and it just amazed me. How is it older people just are so easygoing about this subject of death? To me, it sounds like a heavy one. And, of course, at the time, I didn't have the insights and understandings, which I gleaned later, and I'm very glad I did. It was almost accidental, but I'm sure, we're led... our life is led, as it were, by, let's say, a support team that's in the spirit world that's sort of helping you realize your destiny, if you will, for this lifetime. And so I came to find out things that just through happenstance, mostly through reading, where you hear things or you see a show and it triggers the thinking process. So I began to have a greater understanding that what I was taught when I was younger, and I was raised a traditional Christian, that there, there'd be this, when you die, there's this kind of this judgment ceremony, and you either went to hell or you baked for a while in purgatory or you went to heaven or, with all these typical things you're taught. So I believe that, of course. I didn't have any other frame of reference to go by. So I come to find out later, though, it's not quite that way. We are spirits, consciousness, if you will, that are immortal. what makes us have our desires, our picadillos, our likes or dislikes, our drives, our concerns, our worries, our enjoyments, etc. All these attributes are part of our consciousness, which is immortal and eternal. Before we came here, we were in the spirit world, and we were just as much alive and thinking and musing and, you know, enjoying all the aspects of life. We, you know, music, sports, you know, art, whatever. All the things that we enjoy here in physical life, you also can enjoy and do enjoy in the spiritual life, in the spirit world. So we come into a body, we enter into the body of a baby that is chosen for us, or actually we play a role in deciding who our parents would be, because we want to learn certain lessons in a lifetime, and we've all had many of them. And I realize this notion, what I'm talking about, is, you know, flies directly in the face of traditional Christian teaching, so I understand that. However, though, even many Christians, though, come to realize that, or people who were raised in the Christian faith, come to realize that the dogma they've been taught is not exactly accurate in all regards. Some of it is, some of it is not. And this is one of the areas that I come to find out, that what I was taught is not quite accurate. We are immortal beings. And we take up housing in a physical body, and we have a lifetime's experience. And the goal is, as I mentioned to you privately, to learn spiritual lessons while here on Earth. So if we're especially nasty in a lifetime, or if we're grasping and greedy and lustful and abusive and use others and step on people to get ahead and just concern ourselves with amassing power, money, etc., we will have a type of pleasure, if you will, from that sort of stuff in the physical realm. But when you return to the spirit world, you'll quickly realize that all of that amounted to nothing. And what it typically does is that it lowers your rank. If I can say it that way, it lowers your rank in the spiritual world, and your let's call it soul development is retarded somewhat, and you kind of go to the back of the class. So when you go back to the spirit world, the people who you will encounter, who you will associate with, who you live with, etc., are of the same spiritual rank as you. So if you lived a nasty life, if you were a destructive individual, let's say you're, you know, I don't know, a mafioso hitman or something, you killed a lot of people. Well, when you get to the spirit world, it's going to be people like you who will be your neighbors. And what's special about earthly life is that because we don't know when we come into the life that we were in this spirit realm, and we don't know that we're actually here to, you know, move up in soul development by learning spiritual lessons. Because we don't know all that, because it's erased from our conscious memory, you know, when we are born into a newborn baby's body, we have the perfect testing ground, as it were, because you don't have pre-knowledge. Well, if I do X, Y, and Z, I'm going to get this. See, lacking that pre-knowledge, it's a pure decision in every moment of your life to either do the right thing or do the not-so-right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all here for this reason, in that when we leave the physical body for the final time, by the way, we leave the physical body every time we go to sleep at night and we dream.
Mm-hmm.
Your astral body goes into the astral plane, and your astral body does not need sleep. Your physical body does. So we have adventures in the astral realm, and sometimes we remember parts of them in the morning, and we say, gee, wasn't that an interesting dream? Well, you were really weren't here. You weren't where your body was. You were out in the astral world. So it's leaving the astral body when your body dies is no different than when you fall asleep at night. It's about the same experience. There is no pain when you pass, you know, when your physical body expires and you pass into the spirit world. There is no pain at all. So that, let's say, in the instance you might die from, let's say, a violent death from, you know, being shot or an accident or something, you'll only experience the pain while your physical vehicle is still there. But once you pass into the spirit world, you know, all pain ceases. So, you know, your father just passed, and it's, of course, it's hard because you're used to, you know, you enjoyed the experience of having him there daily, so you can talk to him on the phone and see him on Sundays and Thanksgiving, and you know, just have that. And you were lucky to have your father live to the age that he did, and so I feel lucky too. My father didn't live as old as yours, but still he didn't die young either. So I was with my father for a fair amount of my adult life. And I, of course, was taken back when he did die, but still I had enough understanding of the metaphysical thing that I was quite sure he was in the spirit world and that his consciousness continued. Subsequently, in later years, I contacted people who have the ability to communicate with people who have deceased, and I've talked to my father on more than one occasion, and I'm totally sure it's my father because what we talked about, only he and I would know. The person who was acting as the medium would not have that knowledge at all, or could not have that knowledge. So I've talked to my father on a few occasions. I've talked to other relatives and friends who had passed because at the time I felt it was necessary to determine some information, and your departed loved ones are with you anyway, because you know he made it clear to me, you know, he could clearly monitor, he knows what I'm up to, has been following my life ever since he passed. I didn't have to tell him, he already knew. I started to tell him at one point. He says, I know. He says, I'm with you. I'm following with you. You don't have to tell me. I mean, it was almost funny. I mean, actually, we did laugh about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So your relatives are over your shoulders. I have a grandmother who's, I was told by more than one medium, one of my spirit guides is my grandmother on my father's side, who I never met, and she died before I was born. But because I guess she's in my consciousness. I have a picture of her on the mantle with my grandfather, again, on my father's side. I didn't meet either of them. They both died before I was born. She's with me. Now, I don't know why, but she's with me. So she's assisting me on this journey. So we will all return to the spirit world. We'll all be reunited with the ones who we who cared most about us and who we most cared about. And life goes on. It's eternal. So it's easier for me to say that now. I didn't realize it when I was younger, but I do realize it now. And I don't know how I'll feel, you know, at the moment of death, but I've already had, let's say, a little brush with it, as did you. So I had that, you know, that out-of-body experience. No great shakes in my case. I mean, your experience you told me about was extraordinary, but mine was rather, you know, pedestrian next to what you experienced. But nevertheless, I was completely aware that I was not in my body. I was totally aware of that, and yet I was me in every sense of the word. I had all my senses. I could a touch, a taste, smell, etc. You retain all your senses when you are in the spirit realm, and all your memories. You're thinking the same way you are now. You're no smarter. You're no more enlightened when you're in the spirit realm than you are right now. So don't plan on, you know, becoming a genius after you pass on and, you know, and get your wings and harp. It doesn't work that way. So whatever you got now, that's what you're taking with you. So if you want to bone up, you know, you only can get the knowledge the old-fashioned way. You got to study. By the way, you can study in the spirit world too, and many people do.
Sure.
In fact, you can do all the things that you do in the physical world. You can play sports. You can eat food. You can live in a house. Many people do. You don't have to, but you can because they're used to that world and they like it. So they stay with the people they love and they just carry on as if they were here.
Mm-hmm.
You could have the appearance that you choose. Most people, and you know, who pass, kind of like to look the way they did in their mid-30s. So most people look that way because they wish to. But if you want to look younger, it's okay. If you want to look older, it's okay.
You mentioned something. If I can interject something before it slips in my mind, because this is very true. And I have an understanding of this. There are people who've written about this, and I agree with most or all of what they've said. In terms of the baby, you know, when the spirit enters the body, the baby is depending upon the parents and all those that it comes into contact with to enable it to expand and grow and in a functional way.
Yeah.
It's if you look at the whole process of life from infancy all the way up to golden age, we'll say, hopefully it's a long life. Some people would anticipate that they could easily live to 100, and why not longer? Yet what happens to us in this system here on this planet is our consciousness is turned off as early as possible so that we can be programmed, basically, to be other than what we are. And there's a repeating truth that comes out in metaphysics. And it expands into other areas, too. Don't get me wrong. It's not just exclusive to metaphysics. But the aspect of learning really is how you deal with things in a three-dimensional world, yet in the astral plane, which you referred to, and in the higher realms, which or the other dimensions, which also make up parts of us, which we to which we are unaware, trapped in this matrix here, and this three-dimensional construct. We're really, the challenge of life is to remember who we are. And the baby, the infant, actually has that knowledge within itself. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the physical ability to express itself, yet sometimes you hear of a one-year-old that knows how to read and can spell and can recite words. There's a YouTube video where there's a 6 or 7 month old baby looking at cards, and the mother says, "What does this say?" And the child says, "That says fire engine." Mm-hmm. And it's not a picture. It's the words written out. Mm-hmm. What does a fire engine look like? It's red, and it's long, and it has a ladder on it, and big wheels, and, you know, this is basically, for all intents and purposes, it's still an infant, and it's expressing a certain kind of intelligence. Well, that comes out. That could come out in any child if it's nurtured properly, if it's taught properly. And certainly the educational system is not designed to teach properly. It's to program. It works just like the boob tube works, just like the magazines. The overemphasis on image and thought, but not constructive thought, patterned thought that is designed to lead us in a particular direction as if we have no other option. In other words, if you're a good citizen, you do this and you think this way and you speak this way. Everything you do follows what is accepted. We're told this is accepted and these other things are not. which now stifles creativity, which stifles the growth of the being within the body, because it's not about the body, it's about that being that you referred to, the soul or the spirit aspect of who we are. So if I may just add this, I know personally that my life was sort of like what I'm describing now, in that my interest in music, I came here to be a musician and a composer, that was nourished by my parents, both parents. Mm-hmm. And every one of my siblings took the same path. That is not by chance that occurs. That's not, you know, it's not like shooting craps. Mm-hmm. We tend not to even look at those things very much or very closely to understand those things. Many people walking on this planet are just tripping around as if they're sleepwalking. Mm-hmm. And they never reach that level. They function and they exhibit certain aspects of personality and certain qualities of what we hold as the higher level of beings on the planet. Yet those people often suffer from many things because they are not playing by the rules that we're expected to play in a slave society. And I use the whole planet as the example. Mm-hmm. So the potential is within. The soul doesn't really need to learn anything. What the experience of life is manifesting what the soul knows so that we regain that consciousness, you see? And that's how you now elevate yourself. If you murder, if you plunder and steal and rob and rape and pillage and all the horrible things that go on this planet, you will reap what you've sown. That's in all the religious books. It's not just the Christian Bible. Mm-hmm. And yet that's understood about amongst people who have never formally studied religion or studied in an organizational construct where the whole group is following a particular belief pattern that's designed to line the pockets of the person that's in the front. Mm-hmm. You know, that's claiming to be the special envoy between the collective congregation and the creator. Mm-hmm. And that is abused, not just in religion, it's abused by governments, it's abused by the people that run governments, and currently it's organized crime. We might as well have Frank Nitti and Al Capone and Bugsy Siegel and the whole group out here in concert right now doing what our government is doing and doing what corporate leaders are doing and the religious leaders. Right. My comparison to that is because in describing that baby is pure and it's got that knowledge. It's not able to express it. So life is a process of remembering. And that's not a mental sense of the word. It's a rebuilding or a restructuring. As if you lost an arm and you can remember yourself and grow another arm. Mm. Okay? We think of remembering as a brain function, you know, a function of thought process.
Right.
And in a sense, that's one of the meanings of the word. But what are we taught to remember? We're taught to remember the rules and the programming. And that's where we have shirked our responsibility. Now, it's very clever how it's been crafted for us, you see. It's demonic, actually, how it's been crafted for us, because to impinge upon the sovereign rights, as each of us have under a grander creator that has created billions of galaxies, is rather presumptuous and really stupid. It's like watching the same magic trick over and over. And the trick never really finishes. And so the magician starts it over again, hoping to get the applause and the approval of the audience. Mm. Never revealing what the trick is, never revealing how it's done, and always trying to present the trick in a new way, but always with the same results. That's life on this planet. That's where humanity is doomed to failure unless we wake up from that and expand. And it's done through the heart. That was the whole meaning of my opening comments. And you followed along with that. I just wanted to add that's my perception.
Well,
having cheated death.
Yeah, it's a very important perception. It's really a keystone perception, because yes, there is this idea that you have when you're in Western society, the idea that as you said, it's an intellectual, it's a cerebral thing, and of course we while the brain is an organ that allows our consciousness to express itself physically, you know, via what we see and speak and hear, etc. The consciousness, etc., is the heart of your let's say knowledge base.
Mm-hmm.
And as you were mentioning a week or so ago, when you had Jim Murray on, I heard that show.
It must have been one of our power shows.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he mentioned the concept that's that people need to be reminded of, that they're, and this is a little bit hard to believe when you first hear this, but you can't imagine how. But again, because you're trying to achieve the understanding with a limited set of tools, you know, with just the human brain. There are species of folks in the universe whose brains are substantially larger than humans and therefore have a much greater intellectual capacity. But it doesn't mean that their consciousness is any greater. It's just that their, let's say, their hardware is higher tech, you know, and so they can express their consciousness more with greater depth of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean they really know more. It's just that the vehicle they're using is a Cadillac versus a Chevy, okay? So
no, and we're not putting down Chevy, right?
No, but you get the idea, you know. Or I should have said a Porsche. No, versus
I just bailed you out.
Chevy. So
and it didn't cost a dime.
Yeah, it didn't. Exactly. Thank you. Very good. So anyway, we all are connected to our higher self. The higher self is a greater version of us. We are one aspect of our higher self. It's possible, I can't guarantee this, but many people have written about this.
Mm-hmm.
There might be 10 or 15 of us on different planets having similar experiences, and we're all connected to a single higher self. That's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
The higher self, though, is...
We're connected to the highest self, that's for
yeah.
sure.
Well, through the higher self. So,
yeah.
And, you know, a fundamentalist Christian like Edgar Cayce wrote about this at length in his books. The higher self is sort of the middleman between us and the big library in the sky. Now, Akashic Records is one name for it. Jung called it the universal mind. It's the same thing. All experiences that we have, all thoughts, all words that have ever been expressed, are being expressed, or will be expressed in the future, have already occurred. They're all encoded in this giant library of experiences we call the universal mind. So you said you're really remembering. That's quite true. As you get realizations or as insights come to you and you have this, oh, my God, aha, type of experiences, mm-hmm. as you learn new stuff, you're really just recapturing something that's already in your higher self memory banks. It's just that you didn't have it on the conscious level. You certainly had it on the subconscious level.
Yeah.
But in the conscious mind, you just pulled it out of, you know, out of the hard drive. And you put it up on your screen. Oh, my God. It's always been there.
Mm-hmm.
The insult is, it's like a river. It comes from the universal mind through your higher self into your subconscious mind. And it's just sitting there waiting for you to bring it up in your conscious screen.
I'm sure you recall, Ken, maybe a science class that you took, and it may have been early on in your schooling or later on. You know, sometimes this isn't even mentioned anymore. But we're taught we have five senses. That's the first lie. We have more than five senses. In fact, the sense that we have that transcends those five senses and operates in all planes of existence is the one that brings the most answers.
Mm.
You know, you can only smell what is in the range of the sense of smell. You can only see what's in the range of sight.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not impeded by something else, because there are such things as tall buildings that block the view of the whole skyline, or
right.
Block what may be on the other side of that building. And yet, we're told that you can only see so much, so far, or you can taste certain things. And yet, we're all so different in our individuation, in as we're expressing ourselves in this reality, in what we call a life or a life form. What is sweet to me might be sour to you. And what may seem good to me may seem bad to you. Not that good and bad are senses. Those are actually judgments, and quite often they're deemed to be illusions. They're not real. They're conclusions drawn from what information is available to us and how we can apply it. Well, if we can somehow adapt that into who we are and what we do, then it becomes part of our experience. And if it becomes a phobia, we limit our experience. You see, that's where programming is effective, in that it counters the senses, or it over activates certain senses.
Mm-hmm.
Sight and sound are two used. They're highly receptive to lots of information. In fact, sight is directly related to spiritual sight. And so if you control the physical sight of a being, you limit its ability to perceive what is on the unseen levels, which is where metaphysics comes in, or what some call the occult. But also the miracles in religion crisscrosses or moves into the domain of the metaphysical when a miraculous healing takes place. Even the concept of seeing a baby made, conceived, and growing within the womb of the mother, and the mother giving birth, and the baby taking on certain characteristics throughout the life that show a progression of super intelligence. These are miracles, and yet they exist all over the place. And we are not taught the fundamentals of who we are in that respect. We're taught this is what is good, this tastes good, this sounds good, this looks good, this feels good, meaning the sense of touch, and we rely on our fingertips to do the feeling, or certain body parts to do the feeling, and we never learn the fundamentals of feeling with the heart, because feeling with the heart enables us to see with the heart and to hear
right.
with the heart, you see, and they know this. Those that control this three-dimensional reality for their own benefits, for their
yeah.
designs, you see,
right.
encroaching upon our sovereignty, they'll have to pay the price along the line, just like you described. You know, that's the concept of karma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you sow what you, you reap what you sow.
Right.
And so it's even written about in the Bible, but the term doesn't come up. Somehow that's a mystical word that's just made up to sound ethereal and to sound spiritual. But it's a law. It's the law of cause and effect.
Right. Yep. You're absolutely right. And sometimes they call those group of laws universal laws. And that's one of the more profound awakenings that I discovered some years ago is the universal laws. That was really an eye opener for me, and it certainly took the edge off many things that I was anxious about, worried about, which most people are. Once you understand the laws of cause and effect, I have a wonderful audio tape from a guy who used to be had his own church here in the Los Angeles area. Actually, he was in Hollywood. I've never met him. He passed, I believe, in the early 90s. His name is Dr. Robert Bitzer, and I just happened to come across an audio tape of his once. I was at a conference, and they had the part of the conference where they were selling different things. And anyway, there was this one bin that had these oddball audio tapes, and they were offering the tapes at a very low price. I think it was only 50 cents. I never heard of them, but I just happened to thumb the tape, and I looked at the title, and there was, it says, Laws You Make Yourself. And that intrigued me. So 50 cents, hey, I bought it. And I didn't listen to it until after I got home from the conference, which, it was one of these deals. I had to fly to another state. But when I did, I listened to it on multiple occasions because I really was getting important information from this fellow. And so actually, I perhaps listened to it as many as 100 times. I could practically recite it from heart. And I mention it on my website. It's on my products page because he does discuss and gives practical examples of the cause of law and effect. And
you mean the law of cause and effect?
I'm sorry, the law of cause and effect.
That's okay.
And you can't get around it. It's in place whether you like it or not, whether you want it to be in place or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's there, and nothing can prevent its wheels from turning. And this is, the concept of you reap what you sow. So that in every case, this is a law. It's a law that cannot change, and it's true throughout the universe. It's true for us. It's true for other beings in the universe, aliens, of either higher or lower development, if you will. It's true throughout the universe. You create your reality through this phenomena of cause and effect. When you have a thought, when you take an action, there's always a consequence of that thought and that action. And it essentially bounces back on you. It's kind of a mirror type effect.
Mm-hmm.
When you take actions that are helpful, restorative, giving, loving, supportive, etc., what happens is that you create effects of the same order that come back to you. Usually they're magnified about 10 times. That's the typical ratio. So for every $1 you put out in goodwill, you get back, you receive back 10 in goodwill. So we might have mentioned this in other we talk about the law, law of cause and effect. When you help people financially, for instance, and I'm not talking about loans, I'm talking about giving people money who truly need it, not just, giving money to the IRS. I'm not referring to that.
You're speaking more of like charity,
when I'm talking about charity, right. But when it's done without ulterior motives, it works the best. It still works somewhat, even if you're doing it for tax write-offs, et cetera. But it works at a much higher return rate, let's call it, when you do it for strictly selfless reasons. So that the more you give, I say this to everyone I talk about, the more you get back. It's as simple as that. So when you give a dollar or $5 or $10 to a guy, you know, who's panhandling on a corner where a traffic light is, yes, I know in most cases they're using it for booze, they're using it for drugs. Hey, I've been around. I know what they're using the money for. I'm homeless, though. It doesn't really matter. That person's working out his destiny, his karma, as a alcoholic, as a drug addict, etc. That's his deal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying if I knew for sure he's taking my money and running right to the crack dealer, I'd give him the money. I probably wouldn't. But I don't really know, do I? But I can imagine in most cases they're using it, you know. Sure, they're using some of it for food, but we know. Because when people are in misery, you dull the pain by drinking alcohol or taking drugs. I'm not saying that's desirable for a society, but that's what you do when you're in pain. So I understand it, and I don't necessarily condemn them for it.
You know, it's synchronous that you even brought that issue up, because I was thinking, and you must have been picking this up on some level. I was thinking about a sign I saw. This is a short story, folks. this guy was standing on a street corner near a lamppost, kind of leaning against the lamppost, and he had a handmade sign on a piece of white cardboard with big black letters. It said, "Why lie? I need money for beer." I swear.
That is beautiful.
You see, the guy was dealing with the issue of all the money he was losing because people would be suspicious that he wouldn't spend it on the meal or on a cup of coffee. He just came right out and said, "Why lie? I need money for beer."
Wow, that is beautiful.
But that's creativity, you see. That's somebody that thought a way, at least a temporary solution, okay? He figures he increases his odds if he fesses up from the get-go. Now, the right beer drinker comes by and say, "Yeah, you know, let me buy you a beer."
Right.
He may get a 6-pack or a 12-pack.
Right, exactly. So
that's how it works, too.
That's how it works, right. So I want to just, because I know we're getting short on time, and I failed to get it in last time, so I want to take the last 10 minutes or so to get back to, I would particularly like to address younger people or people who are just starting a family and have small children. They, if they're awakening to the New World Order takeover agenda, you know, are more fearful, let's say, than you or I might be, because when you're older, you understand more. So I want to make it clear to young people that you are the creator of your destiny. We all are. And that there is a unending supply of energy that is available to you. It comes from the creative universe, if you will, and it can flow into you and through you and serve you if you allow it to flow through you, if you're open to it. Now, the way you're open to it is you got to have cultivate a loving heart, because this stuff flows when you're a loving person. And if you're a selfish person, if you're into, you know, self-serving motivations, your valve is almost turned off. So yeah, you'll get some of it, but it's a very small streamlet. The people who get, you know, the gusher are the people who give, and the people who are forgiving. There are precepts that Christ mentioned in the Beatitudes and Sermon on the Mount, and also in the single Golden Rule, which I was happy to hear Jim Murray mention in that last talk, because I, too, allude to this when I muse on this subject myself, is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It is the one catch-all rule that kind of covers all the bases. And if you treat people with respect and love and kindness and consideration that you yourself have appreciated from those who've been kind and loving to you, you know how wonderful it makes you feel. And particularly when you do this to children and younger people, these are the most precious of all. You have to take the greatest care with, you know, the most vulnerable in our world. So when you're that way, you will get all the help you need to overcome the difficulties which the New World Order appears to present you at this point in our history, because illusions are deceptive. The New World Order, even though they're in their end game, are more disheveled, disorganized, in chaos than they've ever been in their history of, you know, in their thousand, multi-thousand years histories of trying to reach this culmination point. Because the light is pouring in faster than they could keep off. And young people need to know that hold on to your morality. Hold on to your sense of goodness and fair play and help your neighbor, etc. Because if you do, you're going to get all the assistance you need. And the day will come in which you won't have to ask me or Don Nikoloff or anyone else who's on the internet who seems to be adept at giving advice. You won't have to ask them. You'll get the information on your own. The same way it comes to me, because I used to ask too, of course. And the point is, you get to a certain point of advancement on the knowledge curve, that, as it will, that you no longer need to ask someone else to buy the ticket for you. You're already on the subway. You're riding along on the train. And you're on this, current. You're flowing with this current. And if I need to learn something in order to, say, mention it on my website, or the info will come to me. I'm totally confident in that. It usually comes in the form of email or phone calls or something I'll see on television. But it comes to me. It keeps on coming to me. So I have no problem in coming up with, well, what should I put on the website today? That's not the problem. I perhaps get up 1% of what I'd like to get up for that day. If I had more time, I'd have 30 articles a day, every one of them a killer on my website, because I have them all here. They're coming to me every single day in this torrent of information. I just don't have the time to put it all up because I got to do other stuff, you know, to pay the rent and et cetera. But
tell me about it.
Everyone who opens themselves to this process of being a loving person and being a giver, and the more you give, the more you get, you'll be able to weather everything that the New World Order will throw at us and still survive and come out triumphant in the end. I'm quite sure of it. If enough people catch on to what I'm telling you now, what I'm, you know, the principles we're talking about worldwide, the New World Order is going to collapse like a house of cards, because they need the legions of dummies in the military, and not only the U.S. military, but I'm talking about the Israeli, the Chinese, the Russian, the North Korean military. They need the military boobs to continue to be brainwashed and follow their militaristic, fascist, orders. If the military stop cooperating, they got a problem. If law enforcement, you know, police, these groups that are involved, you know, Interpol, etc., anyone who's, you know, carries a gun for as his job, etc.
Blackwater.
If all these people don't cooperate to install the enslavement agenda install the murder agenda, install the concentration camp agenda, there's not going to be any concentration camps. They need millions of mind-controlled morons to cooperate with them. And the more people wake up, particularly if you're in a position of authority or you can make a difference in, you know, assisting those of us who are trying to, you know, throw a monkey wrench into the New World Order takeover deal. If you wake up and realize that, hey, I don't have to do this. If all the cops who are, you know, going to be dragooned to, you know, beat people and taser them and mace them when they're trying to demonstrate against the war or the WTO or any of the other New World Order or the G20 stuff, et cetera, in England. If all those cops, or at least the majority, started to, you know, did not cooperate, the whole New World Order is going to collapse. So we have an advantage today that they didn't have, let's say, during, you know, the 30s in Germany, World War II. This internet can bring a lot of information to anybody right into their home. And, you know, we can really overcome the whole game through knowledge and through understanding. And if you remember this notion of doing the right thing, keeping your morality about you, no matter what, no matter how bad it gets, if you wind up in a concentration camp or whatever, don't lose your morality, because when you die, it's no big deal. You're still here when your body dies, and you're going to realize that when, you know, your moment comes, and you're going to say, now, what was I, you know, getting so worried and twisting myself into pretzels with fear about? Holy mackerel, this is beautiful! You're going to realize that when you go back to the spirit world. So don't compromise yourself by doing the wrong thing, and then when you get into the spirit world, you're going to have to live with other scumbags. You know, I'm sorry. Remember this. Remember this. So young people, particularly with young families, you got to take heart. Let me mention this. I just started to read a book that's originated in Russia somewhere in the mid to late 90s. It's called Anastasia. You might have heard of this book. It's a series of books. It's subtitled The Ringing Cedars.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone should get those books. Some of them are already available as PDFs online, but people have been trying for 2 years to get me to read this book. I finally started to read it.
It's excellent.
It's excellent, but it does reinforce the very principles we're talking about tonight.
Mm-hmm.
This woman, who apparently is a real person, is the life force, the creative power is flowing through her. She's like a river. And this man who came, who encountered her, and he's like a child, although he's much older than her, because he's learning these metaphysical laws that we're talking about firsthand from her. And she's demonstrating you can get anything you want from the universe. It's all given to you. You just have to know how to be open to it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the message I want to close with tonight. No matter what the New World Order has, do not respond with fear and play their game of knuckling under to their microchipping and their vaccines and all that. They're going to destroy you. Don't be foolish to, you know, throw in your lot with evil people. They will destroy you and your family and your kids.
Now, we are out of time.
Yes.
I would like to make a comment on something you said very briefly here before we sign off tonight and do our wrap about your website and all that. Wrap with a W, okay, in the front. You mentioned mind control. There are those who are mind controlled, I know, and you mentioned morons, and there are many of those wandering about. And you mentioned a new breed, mind-controlled morons. I would think just being a moron would be sufficient.
Would be enough. Well, I'm being intentionally sarcastic because I want the people. I don't really, you know,
I understand. Yeah,
they're really of normal intellectual capacity. What I'm talking about, when I'm being sarcastic intentionally, to hopefully give the people who might hear this, who might be in playing these roles, a little kickstart to wake up.
Yeah, yeah. And you did it with more eloquence than I usually do. More tolerance. But that was a new one. Because I know there are those who are mind-controlled, and there are some morons. But you did mention mind-controlled morons. So I guess they're getting pretty desperate that they...
Well, actually, they are. They are quite desperate.
And that is the whole point of my introduction on tonight's show, just to, you know, to sort of close this whole thing. And I appreciate you going in the direction that you did tonight, because I know there were a lot of other things yet that you wanted to cover. I had to get that message out, though. You know, I had to share that in appreciation for all those that gave selflessly, you know, through prayer and positive thought and, you know, putting out, doing exactly what you described, you know, doing that. The prayers last night ended my father's suffering in an hour.
Wow.
You know, I can say that. And that is totally true, and it shows us that if we can end one person's suffering in an hour, how long would it take to end all our suffering once we understand that we're all in this together? This is not a bunch of individuals fending for themselves, because ultimately we all reconnect when we get to that place that you're describing.
Yeah, right.
You know? So, I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's what comes through. That's what came through. And I know that we can solve all of our problems. I don't care how big it is. I don't care how big the standing armies are and how advanced the weapons are and how demonic those that control those things are. We can change it overnight.
That's right. I gonna agree with that. Yeah, I know that to be true. Yeah.
Well, Ken, you're going to be on the show more this month, and I think more, or as much as Jim Murray, if not more.
Yes. Well, I love it. I mean, these chats are really a lot of fun, and I'm very happy to do it. I learn as much as I put out.
Well, I want to encourage the listening audience to visit your website if they haven't, and even if they have, go there, because he's always got new stuff up just about every day, if not even several times a day. And amongst all the other things you're doing, go to educate-yourself.org. educate-yourself.org, and the dash can be replaced with the word hyphen if you prefer, those yuppies out there. Ken, thanks a lot for being on the show. It was a lot of fun. It was an honor to have you on and listening to your message too.
It
resonates with me, and I'm sure it resonates with many out in the listening audience. So I look forward to your next visit. In the meantime, I want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and for letting us extend it a couple extra minutes. Seth, thank you. Most of all, you, the listening audience, those of you who have been praying for me and my father and my family, thank you from the bottom of my heart. I wish all of you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.